Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cracked with Siobhan Aris. Today's episode was made possible by Canfield Technologies. Try any of their products and you'll see why Canfield sets the standard for the stained glass industry. Find which ones are right for you at canfieldmetals.com. I'd also like to thank Monarch Glass Studios, dubbed the Rondell King by Jim Flanagan of Fremont Antique Glass in Seattle, Washington. Monarch owner Tyler Kimball has made thousands of rondelles for stained glass artists and architectural glass studios around the globe. Rondelles coming out of Monarch Studio are made the way they were meant to be, easy on the assembler and beautiful to the viewer. Learn more and submit your order at monarchglassstudio.com. For today's episode of Cracked, I had the pleasure of speaking with Chicago artist Ben Houtkamp of Ben's website. Ben has one of the most recognizable styles I have seen to date. His brightly colored pieces are reminiscent of childhood nostalgia, video games, and puzzles. His work is happy, and we all need more happy. I'm a big Ben fan, and I think you will be too. Join me as I crack it all wide open. Hi.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for doing this to you as well.
Yeah. I'm a bit frazzled. I don't know if I mentioned this, but I have kind of a lot going on. And it was kind of a good time to do this, but it's also like right in the middle of many, many things. So apologies if I'm like seem frazzled or unprepared. I have a whole grab bag of excuses. So
That's okay. I didn't have to beg you to come on my podcast. So
I have a reputation of being hard to track down. I'm trying to change that.
So you're joining us from Chicago.
That's right.
And you're from Rockford.
Yeah.
I know I'm supposed to be asking you these questions and you're supposed to be telling
me. No, just tell me. You tell me.
Okay. Well, I was really excited about this part because I was born in Sycamore.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. I'm from DeKalb.
Small world.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, no shit.
And when I think of Rockford, I think of the Cherryvale Mall.
Of course. My stomping ground.
Yes. And the Cinnabon. That's where I was introduced to that delicacy.
Yeah. That was my first. Cherryvale Mall is where I learned how to be goth when I was like 10 or 11 because they had the Hot Topic. I don't know if you have ever been to a Hot Topic, but
Okay.
So that was back when I had hair and like my mom every morning would like take time to like spike it for me before I went to school. Anyway, I learned all of that shit at the Cherryvale Mall. So it's cool to know maybe we were there at the same time at one point.
We might have been.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 30. I just turned 30.
Oh no, honey. I'm 43. Okay. You were just in the womb when I was exploring Hot Topic hair.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
So you live in Chicago now. You're from the Cherryvale Mall. You're from Rockford. When did you move to the city?
The second I turned 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was over it. I had like started going to the community college in Rockford and was just like, nope, this is not my life. So I almost did it on a dare. Like I was kind of a hippie back then. And I think that I never saw myself in the city. And like, I talked a lot of shit about like people who moved from Rockford to the city. Cause I felt like, oh, I'm going to go work on a farm and like do like dreadlock stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I had a lot of friends here who were like in college and everything else that were from Rockford. You know, there's like a pipeline from Rockford to Chicago, of course. Anyway, one of my good friends had a room open up and just like on a whim, I was like, you know what? I'm going to move in with you. And I like told my mom and she was like, absolutely not. You are moving to Chicago. And I was like, I'm sorry, mom, I'm moving to Chicago. And I really thought it was going to last like a couple months. And now like, there's no way I'm ever leaving this place. I love it here. Like I love the people. I love the grid. You know, we take a lot of pride in our grid here.
Mm-hmm.
There's just nothing not to love except the winter. The winter is really shitty and I hate that, but I'm trying to like, now that I'm an adult, I'm trying to give myself the freedom to like go somewhere warm when it's cold. I did that for the first time ever last winter. It's the first time I've ever gone to a warm climate when it's snowing here. And, This is a really long answer to your question. I'm sorry.
This is what I do. This is good.
Okay. So I went to Puerto Rico last winter. One of my best friends who I grew up with in Rockford, Stephen Hoppe, owns a bar and a wine shop in Puerto Rico. And so my girlfriend and I got a flight down there, and it was just like, it's an unreal feeling. I know you travel a lot, or you've like moved a lot, and you've lived in various climates, it sounds like. But like, this is the first time that I've ever like boarded a plane in the cold and exited the plane in like humid warmth. And it was just like, what? And it just makes me think like, why would I be here in the winter any more than I need to be, you know, which I need to be here a lot to like make money, unfortunately. But, you know, every moment I'm not working, I'm going to try to be somewhere warm next winter. That's my goal.
Does your friend have dreadlocks?
No, but he probably did at some point. He was definitely like the farm hippie type.
Okay.
I think we've all had like a dreadlock in our life at least, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's rewind and talk about Rockford just a little bit longer, because I know that your dad was a stained glass artist.
Yeah, currently is.
He still is. He's still with us. And did you grow up living with your father?
Yeah. Okay. He's my best friend. Yeah, he's the guy. And so I grew up, how do I start talking about him? He's such a great guy. And he does so many things. He contains multitudes, as the kids are saying. And he is a stained glass artist for sure, like in every sense of the word, but he's also into like architectural salvage. He's an architecture student formerly, or I don't know if you say formerly, if somebody graduated with an architecture degree, but you know what I mean. So anyway, he studied architecture and he's done stained glass his whole life, like since the 70s, and he's still doing it full time. But he does like salvaging, and I mean, his studio is amazing. It's like filled with glass stuff, but it's also just filled with like hundreds of doors and like cast iron, like vent grates and newel posts. And, you know, he just collects the stuff, but it's like, I can't even like really do it justice with like a verbal description, because it's like tens of thousands of square feet just filled with like millions of objects. And it's like all like categorized, and like he has like, he like strips the paint off of everything. I mean, it's like very meticulous, and just like, it's a wonderful, like it should be a national monument. Like, unfortunately, I think nobody knows about it, except that's not true. Like he's sort of like, he's a known guy. Like people call him when they're like, buy a mid-century house, and like, you know, he's the guy that like finds them the period correct door to like go in the entryway or whatever, you know. So
anyway, that's how he's making money doing that, as well as selling his work.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
But he does a lot of like, he's much more so like capital S G stained glass guy, you know. Like I kind of got into it by accident a little bit, but like he, you know, he knows everything about it. He's done every kind of job, from like church restorations to, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright type stuff, to like, he has his own like goofy modern art that like looks in a lot of ways probably similar to my work, you know, and he's done everything under the sun. But I think like by, you know, the first thing he would tell you about his profession is that he's a stained glass artist for sure.
Okay. And how did he learn?
He learned, this is funny because I never really asked him, you know, until like I finally, this was only like a couple of years ago now that I was like learning how to do it. And I was like, he's telling me this stuff. And like, as you know, and everybody knows who does stained glass, it's like complicated and weird. It's like you have to learn weird things and like new muscle memory. And it's like difficult, and you get cut, you get glass in your eyeballs, for God's sake. And so like when he was teaching me, I was like, there was a moment where I was like, how did you figure all of this out? Because like his dad didn't do stained glass. And he's like, oh, you know, I just went to the library and like checked out a lot of books. And I was like, what? Because like, I can barely do it. This is what I think. Like, I feel like I can barely do it. And like, I have the best teacher in the world. Like he knows everything. He's like patient, but he's like firm and like insists I do it the right way. And like, you know, he's the perfect teacher, and he's my dad, you know. We had, like, there's no awkward, like, he just tells me how to do it. But like, I still feel like I can barely do it. And like, if I was like reading from a library book, like, like I would have given up on the first day for sure, you know. Especially when it comes to like, you know, not just like designing and like cutting the glass and like the fun parts, but like the shitty stuff, like cementing and like finding the right flux and like what if the thing doesn't stick and like how do you bend the thing, you know, just like all of the little stuff. It's like it's so hard to convey like how to do these things without just doing it and like fucking it up a million times until you get it right, hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, another long answer, but he learned from books.
What does your mom do?
She mostly stayed at home with me and my older brother, but she is, she's a wonderful lady. She collects antiques. My parents both collect antiques. They're really into antiques. And so my mom's pastime these days that is also like an income source is she eBays like thrifted antiques and knickknacks and stuff like that. And she's absolutely incredible at it. She's just like an encyclopedia of knowledge. And, you know, one of our favorite things to do if I like go visit in Rockford is just like go to a thrift store. And I'm usually looking for like cool Grateful Dead shirts, but she's like, you know, looking at like salt and pepper shakers that on eBay are worth like $200 or whatever, you know? So,
right. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's like a Venn diagram that my parents have of like their interests, and like there's only like a little sliver of overlap, but there is a sliver of overlap.
And what about your brother? Did he take on any creative endeavor?
Kind of. He's a sound guy. Or you know, he would probably describe himself as an audio engineer. I would describe him as a sound guy. He's a great dude, and he's also an amazing artist. I wish that maybe he does still draw more than I realized, but like when I was growing up, he was like my real artistic inspiration, because you know, it's like when you grow up with a parent as an artist, or this is my experience at least, it's like hard to be like directly influenced by their art, because it's like your parent, they're like not cool, you know. But like my brother was cool, and he was like drawing like the kind of goofy stuff I like to draw. And so you know, we would just like sit in our bedroom and like draw pictures. So anyway, he's a very creative person, and I think that he expresses that in a lot of ways, but professionally he's a sound guy.
Okay. All right. Now you graduate from high school, and I read that you went to, you went to community college first, right?
Yeah. Well, I barely graduated high school. And then, long story short, or long story long, the high school I went to offered this like dual credit program where like when you were, I think as soon as you had a driver's license, you could start taking some of your high school classes at the community college. And if it was like chemistry class, you'd get the college chemistry credit as well as the high school credit. So I started doing that kind of early on, and I actually accrued like a decent amount of college credits by the time I graduated high school. And so I was like this close to an associate's degree, but just like couldn't take it anymore. I was a bad student. I can't do it, you know? So I tried, but no, I just gave up. And I don't know. I still like, there are times when I think like, what if I like went to school, like not, you know, because I want a new profession, but just to like learn, you know, like learn about, you know, something fun would be like art history, or like I'm really into astronomy. And I think like, damn, like what if I would have gone into astronomy? Like what if I was like a planetary physicist or something, you know? But then I like, you know, I think about it for like 2 minutes, and then I'm like, oh, but it costs like hundreds of thousands of dollars if you want to get like a legit degree. And I'm certainly not like, I'm way past the potential of any kind of scholarship. So like, then I'm like, oh, I like have the wake up call. I remember that it's cost money. And I'm like, yeah, not doing that.
I hear you. I've thought that a couple times too, where I'm like, maybe I'll, yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
So did you go on to do any other college? I don't know why I thought that you did. I thought you had a formal art degree. You don't.
No, not at all. I'm very proudly uneducated.
And so before you revisited stained glass, you were drawing and painting quite a bit. Is that right?
Yeah. I've always been drawing and painting. I think if I had to pick like a preferred medium, it would probably just be like pen and paper, or like graphite and paper. You know, I love like, I have like really specific kinds of like instruments I like to use, like rapidograph pens I love, and like certain kinds of like graphite I love to use. But like basically I just love like drawing on paper, like tiny little, like almost like notebook drawings, the type of thing you like draw when you're on the phone, like on hold or whatever, you know. So if money were no object, I'd probably just spend my days like doing that kind of work. But the stained glass thing kind of like, you know, my stained glass pieces look like my drawings, and they're like, I think it's still like the same kind of art. It's just like, this is the first kind of art that I've been able to sell. So it's why I like kind of stuck with it, you know?
Yeah. How were you making money before?
I've worked every kind of job under the sun, but my last straight job before I went full-time glass was for a coffee roasting company. Mm-hmm. And I was like one of their early employees. I had been like a barista for a little bit and like a bike mechanic for a while. And this was like a roasting company that's still around, and they're like doing great. And like, I'm friends with the owner still and everything. But I kind of started as like, you know, just like packing coffee and everything. And then after a couple of years, I was like doing like educational stuff for them, like teaching classes about how coffee is grown and like sustainability and how to like brew good coffee. And then we ended up like creating this like cold brew brand, like me and those two owners. So we kind of started like a separate company, like a sister company. And so for like 2 or 3 years, I was just running that like cold brew company basically. And then I kind of knew that there was like a moment where I was like, why do I own a cold brew company? And like from that moment, I like kind of started realizing that I had to like get out of this. So like, it was awkward. I had to like, you know, relinquish my ownership and like, you know, like dial back and like, I don't know. It was like a weird thing. And it just, you know, my biggest passion in life at this point is just like not having a job and not having to like do the awkward social thing of like climbing ladders within a workplace and like, you know, like making yourself look good to your bosses is just like one of the worst things that a human could ever have to possibly do. And like, we all have done it before, and it's like dehumanizing and fucking horrible. So I don't wish it upon anyone.
Yeah. So you decide, so you did a drawing that you thought, hey, this would look cool in stained glass. And so You reached out to your dad and you said, can you show me how? Had you been thinking about it for a while before, or was just literally out of the blue?
No, I hadn't thought about it at all. I had just been like doing, I think I had been doing like a series of graphite drawings that were like, the point of them was like reduction kind of, and like, it was kind of like a minimalist like exercise or whatever. So I had this like whole sketchbook that was just filled with these like really minimalist like drawings. And I think I was like looking at one of them and just realized that the way the lines like interlaced or whatever, I was like, you know, I started to think of like each bit of negative space as like a piece instead of like negative space. And I was like, I think that this is a drawing that just like coincidentally could be made into a stained glass window, and like nothing would have to change about the lines. Like I wouldn't have to do any like connecting lines, like break any of the pieces basically, you know? And so I feel like it was like right around like Christmas of 2018 maybe. So I was like gonna go to Rockford to be with my folks for Christmas, and I was like, oh, this is like a way I can kill time while I'm there. I'm gonna have my dad like show me how to like make a little window out of this. And it was a huge pain in the ass because it was like, it was just like too small, you know? Like if I would have like blown up the design by like 150%, I'm sure you've done some work like that where you're like, you know, grinding these tiny little intricate things, and like if it would have just been like half again as large, like that detail wouldn't have been like outside of the realm of possibility basically.
Yeah,
we found a way, and it was fun. It was like, you know, I don't know if you're ready for me to say this on your stained glass podcast, but I don't really like working with stained glass. And I think like in this moment, you know, the way I felt about it on day one is the way I still feel about it today, which is like, I like doing hard work, and like, I like accomplishing difficult goals. And, you know, that first, it took me like a weekend to make that little piece. And like, I didn't really love doing it, but I loved doing it more than doing nothing, you know? Like I'd rather do something like hard, especially if it's going to like be lucrative. Like I'd rather do something that's like very difficult and like time consuming and like shitty than just like pass the time doing nothing, you know? And I think as like bleak as it sounds, like that's kind of what keeps me like coming back to the thing and like doing it, is that like it's very difficult and like you know, and I keep designing these things that are like way more intricate than they should be, you know, but like, I don't know. There's something that feels good about like kind of hating the process while you're doing it. And then like you finally scrub it up and like put the patina on the steel and then like show the customer and they're like, oh, wow, I love it. And I'm like, well, I guess it was worth all that bullshit just to like hear you say that, you know, because it is. It's like it's very gratifying to like just hear somebody say like, looks great, thanks. I'm like, yes, you know. So anyway, that's like a, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that first day, like although it was like really hard to learn, like I still feel like I'm in that same moment, you know. It's like still every time I start a piece, it's like a new moment. And I'm like, I'm teaching somebody right now. I have an assistant now named Nicole, who's like a good friend of mine, and she's doing fucking amazing. She's so good at it already, like cutting glass and everything. And but she'll like, you know, she'll do really good on one and then do like not as great on the next one and get kind of down on herself. But like I'm still doing that. Like there are times when like I think like, wow, I've got it. Like I sailed through that last piece so quickly, and like I didn't have to do any grinding when I came to assembling, and like everything just went perfectly. But then like the next piece after that, like I'll cut everything like too big for some reason, you know?
Yeah.
And like it'll take me like five times as long to do that piece. And so I think that like over the years I'm learning that like there, you know, it's not like a linear like upward trajectory of like getting better at stained glass. It's like you kind of just go up and down, and like, or that's my experience at least. It's partially just because I design shit that's like bonkers and, you know, like nobody should like have to, you know, cut these things. But anyway, that's again another long answer, sorry.
That's okay. Your pieces are very intricate and they are very curvy. Was your dad so stoked? Was he like, did he have to like put the phone down for a moment and do like the jig and then get back on the phone and like be like, no big deal, it like, yeah, it's totally, yeah, we can do that,
you know? I think he's stoked. I know he's stoked, but he's also like, the way we interact, he's kind of, he's a little bit hard to read, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he's been, I mean, just incredibly helpful. And like, he still is. Like, he'll never not give me constructive criticism. You know, if I like send him a piece that's like completed, he'll give me like, I forget what they call it, like two roses and a thorn or whatever, like two mm-hmm. things he likes about it. Like, you know, one thing that's like, I think next time, like, you know, you didn't really need this line here. It kind of interrupts the like movement of the piece. And I'm like, what, you know? But so anyway, he is stoked, but he's also like you know, very constructive and like but it's definitely been like, it's a double-edged sword. I think it's kind of like the same double-edged sword of like anyone being freelance is like the way it kind of interacts with your personal life, you know? And like in the specific instance of him and I, it's like you know, it brought us together, like doing this thing, like him teaching me this thing that he's like spent his life doing is obviously like invaluable. It's so cool. But then it's also like, now I no longer work 40 hours a week. I work like 90 hours a week, just like he does. And like, since our studios are in different cities, even though they're relatively close, like it's hard for us to hang out because it's like, I'm working in my studio and he's working in his studio, and I'll like call him and be like, you know, what do you do if a piece is broken and another piece is hooked around it? Like, do I have to like break them all? You know, like just, I'll call them for advice, but I do feel like it like brought us together in some ways. And also just like the inevitability of like being freelance, like physically has like a little bit of space between us right now, but that's just kind of part of like getting your bearings and like hopefully working less very soon.
When you go visit, mm-hmm. is it hard not to be in his studio and to be kind of like tinkering around with him?
Yeah, it's definitely. Yeah, it's impossible not to go there and tinker around with him. But it's, you know, that part of it, like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, like, I love, like, being there and tinkering with him. And, like, that doesn't feel like work at all. It's just, like, because, you know, I feel like my studio is, like, my little, like, playground, too, you know? I just wish that they could be, like, a little bit, like, physically closer together. Because mm-hmm. it's, like, so nice when I am there with him. And, like, he, even if it's not like related to art, if he's just like showing me like addition he's building, or like you know, like a new workbench he made, or like a light table. He has light tables everywhere. So like going there and just like bonding with him over like the, even just like the construction, like the bones of his space, is like just as fun as like the artistic part of it, you know. But the important thing is that, like, you know, he's old and like I'm getting old, I feel like, and like I just want to like spend as much time physically with him as I can, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just life.
Yeah, that is life. But yeah, you guys are relatively close.
Definitely.
In,
yeah,
in term, you know, you can be up there in a few hours. What is it, like a four-hour drive?
It's like an hour and a half. Yeah, there's no excuse not to go. Yeah, it's
what part close. Of Chicago are you in?
I'm on the north side right now. I'm just about to move to the south side. That's part of my like current turmoil, is that I'm about to move. But I'm in Bucktown, so it's like, in terms of the city, it's relatively close to Rockford.
Okay, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's nice.
That is really nice. Where's your girlfriend's family from?
She's from Chicago. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys get to like consolidate like holidays or no?
Well, it's funny because we kind of just started dating like right before the pandemic started. And like, so that first Christmas of 2020, we didn't do any holidays at all, because it was still like, I don't know, we were all like scared as fuck. And she's a bread baker, and so she was still like working with like a big staff and everything, and like it just didn't seem like a good idea, you know. She's got a huge family too, and my family's decent sized. And then the year after that, 2021, I had COVID, and so nothing happened there. I see her parents all the time, like we've gotten really close and everything, but no holidays yet, just all pandemic related.
Well, your parents are close enough to where I feel like you could do like Christmas breakfast with her family and then drive up and spend, you know, Christmas evening with your family. Like hit all the marks. Okay.
Totally, I think that's what we're going to do.
That sounds like a good plan. I just made it up for you. That's what you're doing.
Yeah,
this year.
I put it in stone. Yeah, Siobhan's Christmas plan.
Yeah. I have a couple talents and that's one of them.
Yeah.
I'm going to move into your work a little bit. Where do you start your design process? Do you use an illustration program?
So, yes, the design process generally depends on the job. Most of the pieces I'm making these days are like not really customized at all. Like I kind of, again, it depends, but like most of the work I sell is kind of like it's like already been designed. So like I almost do like a tattoo flash kind of system, where like if somebody hits me up and like wants a piece, I like kind of feel them out a little bit and like see what they're looking for. But like I think that my work has gotten to look so specifically like my work that people kind of only hit me up at this point if they want something like gooey and like bright and colorful, you know. So anyway, I just kind of like show them a list of options and I'm like, would any of these be cool? Like these ones are this expensive, these ones are this expensive, and they just kind of pick one. And so anyway, it's like different than like I think the traditional stained glass approach, because I don't have to work backwards as often from like the dimensions of like a window opening or whatever. It's more just like making little like one-off art pieces and kind of like just selling them outright. But I do also do like commercial work. And so like in that case, like I do have to work backwards, whether it's like a lamp or like something that's going to be installed in the windows of a restaurant or whatever it is. So in that case, yes, I usually start on paper, generally move to Illustrator after that on the computer. And I love working with Illustrator. It also drives me crazy. Like there are so many things I would change about it if I was like the programmer, you know? And I draw on my iPad a lot too, and there's like no great program in my opinion for making art on the iPad, but like Procreate is like a pretty simple one to just like sketch stuff and kind of feels like you're like drawing on paper, you know, if you like get it set up right to cater to your needs or whatever. So anyway, usually I start on like paper the old school analog way and then like switch to either Illustrator or Procreate on the iPad.
At Green Thistle Glass wanted to know how you scale up from Procreate to large scale paper templates?
Yeah, that's a good question. It borders on, I'm not normally like this at all, but it borders on like a industry secret a little bit of like why my work looks the way that it does. But What I will say is that, like, usually I don't go directly from Procreate to paper. I'll usually, in whatever way necessary, I like switch it to a vector file before I go to paper. So in the case of Illustrator, which is what I normally use, like when you have your art in a vector format, you can literally just like enlarge it as much as you want without losing any like quality. Like if you try to like blow up an image in Procreate, like it just gets like more and more pixelated. It's like one of the worst things about that application. I'll usually, as the last digital step, I'll go to Illustrator, vectorize everything, and then kind of get it to the appropriate dimensions. And in the past, I would kind of just meticulously like use like rulers and compasses to like transfer it to paper, just like get a good idea digitally of what it'll look like, and then like try my best to like make the same thing on a piece of paper. But I'm starting to just like print a little bit and like outsource to like, I have a friend who like owns a printing company, and like he's kind of like dialing in the right like kind of paper and everything and the perfect stroke, you know, and all that. So anyway, another convoluted answer, but the best thing you can do is like vectorize and then like just get the dimensions in Illustrator the way you want them and have somebody print it, I think.
And if you don't have a bud, you can just do it at like Staples, right? Is that what you would suggest?
I think so. That's what my dad has always done, but in his case, he's like enlarging like an analog drawing. So I think he like brings the analog drawing, scans it, and then like I think he is more like interacting with a person, which like us millennials like never do, you know. So like, but I think you like ask them like, can you print this to like 20 inches by 30 inches or whatever, which I've never done that, but I'm sure it works. I have printed things at like Kinko's before, and like the print quality is fine, like it works, but I have found that it's hard to get them to take seriously the need for accuracy in the print. So like there have been times where I was like printing like a bunch of stuff for a big commercial project, and like it was all like set up in Illustrator, so it was vectorized and like everything was drawn to be like the perfect dimensions, but then when they printed it, it was all like an eighth inch like smaller in one direction but not the other, which like especially with like super geometric work, it's like, to me, it's very visually apparent. If you like take a circle and like squeeze it, it's like no longer a circle, it's a fucking oval, you know?
Yeah.
And like, and so I like showed them, and it was like, I'm so sorry to like bring this to you, but like the thing like squeezed it, and like the, you know, it's not, you didn't print it right, you know, unfortunately, like I had to say, and like literally could not really convey like how important like that eighth of an inch or whatever was. So anyway, I mean, this is like kind of a stupid problem to dwell on in 2022. I'm sure there's like a great printer that will like do exactly what you want. But I have not found them, except for my friend Frankie, who's doing it very well for me. But yeah, so anyway, Staples, maybe. I've never tried Staples. They might do a good job.
I don't know if Frankie wants to take on any more business, but if he does, let me know and I'll include his information in the show notes if anybody in the Chicago area wants a Frankie. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. Well, and they ship all over the place too. So I'm sure he'd love the business. I think maybe the footnote there is I'll dial in the process like a little bit more specifically for stained glass, like figure out the good like stroke width and the right kind of paper to use on a light table and everything. And then yeah, maybe we could follow up about Frankie's contact, because I think that he's like, I'm like molding him into the perfect stained glass template printer.
I love it. Let's bring him
to share.
Yeah, let's bring him into the light.
Let's do it.
I have printed at Staples, and it was a glorious experience. So I'm just going to put that out there.
Wow. I did not expect to hear that.
Yeah. So I've only done it once, but it went great. It was actually for that job I just did, because it was so big. I did the coffee shop, the Alfred.
Yeah,
it was
great.
So thank you. It was so huge that I was like, I gotta get like a big roll of, you know.
Yeah. And so did you have to like tell them like what size to print it, or did you have it like set up digitally to print the right way?
I told them.
Yeah.
I did. I went in and I emailed them the file. Mm-hmm. It was a vector.
Okay.
And then they just printed it and it was good.
I think that I've just had bad luck, and I just also didn't try very hard to like find somebody who can print stuff. So I'll try Staples.
I want everybody to use Frankie, but I'm just saying, if Frankie isn't, you know, isn't working out, or Frankie's so busy by the time you hear this episode and need it done.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. Yeah. Frankie's the GOAT, but Staples always got your back too, you know?
I love it. Okay. So your stuff is very colorful. Where are you getting your glass? Your palette is always very similar. It's very bright. It's almost like a neon opaque. Do you find yourself buying the same colors over and over again?
Yep. I buy the same shit every time. Okay. All Bullseye, Opalescent. And I do get kind of picky about like the difference between the production batches that come from Bullseye. And I actually have a huge email thread with one of their salespeople now. I went to Bullseye in Portland. I'm sure you've been there because you like live in Portland? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just went for my first time. I had a show with Kirby. And so we went to the Bullseye factory, and we didn't get to do the full tour. But anyway, all of the Bullseye pink, like the one like color that's like pink, I forget what the number is. All of it that's like been coming to Chicago for the last like year and a half is like completely unusable. It's like super dense, like no light comes through. Like when sunlight does come through, it like basically looks like crimson red, you know? And like back in the day, like the pink I used to buy was like real translucent and like sparkled a lot, and just, I don't know, it was just like a beautiful, like almost like salmony pink, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I like went to Bullseye and I dug around their glass, and like they have a bunch of this like perfect pink that's like just like what I used to buy. And so now I'm like setting up a wholesale account and everything, but come to realize certain colors like are so finicky when they're heated, you know, and like all the Bullseye glass is like kind of designed to be fused, which I don't really do, but they're kind of designed to be consistent after they've been in the kiln. And I don't use them in the kiln, so I'm kind of shit out of luck when it comes to like pulling sheets off the shelf to use as leaded stained glass pieces, because, you know, they're not really designed for that. So anyway, all that is to say that I get kind of picky about what specific sheets, but I buy it from a place called Ed Hoy, which is like a huge, like legendary glass importer out here in Naperville. And they are super nice, and they let you like go in their warehouse if you're a picky bastard like myself, and actually like hand pick glass out of their like huge thing. So that's what I do. I like go look for the sheets I want, and that's all I buy.
I'm so happy for you that Ed Hoy is so close by that you get to do that. Cause that's,
thanks. Yeah. I'm blessed.
That's awesome. Yeah. At Nature on You wanted to ask, I really love your color combinations. Where does this inspiration come from?
Yeah. Well, it touches on the last question too, which I should have talked a little bit more about this, but I think from the very beginning, I've had a philosophy that, I mean, not to call my way of thinking a philosophy, that really blows it out of the water. But, when I think about like what materials you source for making your art, I think that there's a lot of things to be tempted by in the world of glass. Like there's like iridescent stuff, there's like glittery stuff, there's like ripply stuff. And like, I think that stuff is all great, but I also think that, you know, if you want to make a, essentially like a picture, if you want to make a piece of art, like via stained glass, whether it's abstract or it's a flower or a waterfall or whatever it is, like there isn't like, you're just going to kind of cloudy your creative waters, I think, if you start like bringing in a bunch of like wacky different kinds of glass. And I think that like a lot of people kind of fall victim to the temptation of like buying all of this stuff that, you know, it's like, think about any painter you love, anybody mm-hmm. who makes paintings on canvas, like they're not buying paints with glitter in them. You know, you buy primary colors and like you mix them the way to like paint the thing you want to paint, you know? And I think that's like probably changing. And I'm not trying to like talk shit about the stained glass world, because like everybody's just got to like kind of get their bag at this point, you know? But I think that it's better to start with an idea and then execute it. And like most people aren't going to start with the idea of like, I want to do a thing that has like iridescent over here and like, you know, like complete like opaque black over here. And like, you know, I think I try to start with like a drawing and then like color in the drawing and then like turn that into the piece. And like, typically when I do that, it's just like, you know, like I literally like draw with crayons often, you know, I have like Crayola crayons in my studio. I like get like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of computer paper. And I just like draw something with the crayons. And like, I think that like the stained glass is like a polished version of that, but it's still what it is. It's just like goofy little puzzle piece looking shapes that are literally drawn with crayons. And so like, you know, I guess I've never really seen a need to like over, you know, sparkleize them or anything. And I just kind of like using these primary colors.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answered the question, but.
No, it did. I think that, you know, I think one of the cool things about art is that there's no equation, right? It just kind of flows. Yeah. And everybody likes different things. And your color palette is very specific to you. And that's a piece of what people recognize in your work. And so I hear what you're saying. You know, everybody's got their things. They're like, I don't like that. I like this. And that's part of their vision.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. And I think, you know, we're in an overpopulated world here, and there are so many artists, and like, we should always like welcome them, and like competition, you know, as it were, is like a good thing. And like there should be more and more people, but there's definitely, I think that we all kind of uniquely feel like, you know, it's not that we all need to be the best, but we do want to be like recognizable. We want to do something that hasn't been done, or like convey a new idea or whatever it is. And, you know, the way you can do that, I think, is with like really kind of like honing in what you do that is unique to you. And to me, that's kind of like, you know, on one hand, it's like the way that I draw things and like it's the colors I pull. But I also like, I'm really picky about everything that I do. Like I only use a certain kind of lead. I've only bought one kind of lead since the day I started. I've never deviated. I never bought a thicker width or whatever it is, because like I think that's just going to like fog up my ability to like, you know, if I start introducing like different widths of lead, then all of a sudden I'm going to have pieces that have like 10 different widths of lead. And you know, it's like if I draw a picture, I like only use one kind of like stroke or one line size if I'm making a line drawing, and that's kind of how I view the glass. I digress, but you know, like point is, I think it's like totally fine to like pick something that's yours and like stick with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is value in that. And your work is very geometric. And like, when I think of geometry, I think of balance. And so it makes sense. You're not all over the place in terms of the thickness of your lead size. You're not like mixing it up at all. Do you want to give a shout out of what kind of lead you like?
Yeah, I buy it from this real old school company in Milwaukee that's called Crown Metals. And they're great. They're like a little bit hard to like pin down. They don't have like a website that I know of or anything like that. You just kind of like call their landline, and if somebody's like in the office, they'll pick it up, you know? But they're great. It's like, I don't really have a big, great point of reference as to like what lead costs, but I think it's cheap. I buy all my solder from them too, and like huge 20-pound spools. And, yeah, I just like, you know, like a couple times a year, I'll buy like 500 or 600 pounds of lead and just drive up in my truck and fill it up and come home. So anyway, Crown Metal Products, I think is what they're called.
Okay. And did you use them because your dad used them?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, got a family hookup.
Yeah. I mean, everybody finds their greatness in their own way, you know? Like some people don't find their greatness until they start experimenting with like different lead sizes and
exactly. Yeah.
You
yeah,
have
yeah,
to color sure. outside those lines. And, and some people are like, no, like this is what's up. And I love it all. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And that's like, that's an important point to make. I wouldn't want to like tell somebody like it's good advice to only use one size of lead, but I would say it's good advice. If you are inclined to only use one size of lead, like do that. Don't do anything you don't want to do, but do everything that you do want to do, you know,
Do what works for you.
Exactly.
And don't feel pressure to do. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Okay. So I was looking at your website and you've made these incredible lamps. You've made one for a pool hall. I didn't write down the places you've made them for, but there was a pool hall, correct? There was a pizza parlor. And what else?
So there's a pizza place called Pizza Lobo, which is, I think they're all of the lamps on my website are in Chicago. And so there's Pizza Lobo, which is two lamps. And then another similar lamp for it's like a brewery's tap room called Salamoth Brewing. They're in Naperville, but the tap room is here in Chicago in Armitage, and they have a pool table. So it's not exactly a pool hall, but it's a billiard lamp, as they like to call it.
Okay.
And The biggest lamp I made is for a place called Nights and Weekends, which is a newer, like, huge bar slash, like, dance spot in the West Loop. And that's like that was the Wedge, which is like the 14 and a half foot long, like, giant thing. And then I just made a new Wedge, which is a little bit smaller. It's like 12 foot long and maybe 2.5 foot tall. That's for Pizza Lobo 2. And the thing all of these places have in common is that the person who's designing them and, like, commissioning this work is the same guy for all four of them. And, like, I get a lot of, like, commercial inquiries, but I don't normally take them just because it's like a whole list of reasons that, you know, we can get into but don't need to. But anyway, this one person, Kevin Heisner, is, like, a great guy to work with because he's an artist himself. He's also, like, a restaurateur and, like, you know, owns a bunch of bars and stuff. But he's an artist himself. So, like, when he comes to me for, like, a lamp, he's just like, "Hey, I want a lamp." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then I just draw it. And he's like, "Looks good, man. Let's do it." And mm-hmm. I'm like, "Yes." Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah. It's a rare connection. And, like, it's nice to have creative freedom. And so, you know, I'll always say yes to Kevin. He's a great dude. Shout out to Kevin.
Shout out to Kevin. Kevin and Frankie in Crown Metals. So, why, I do want to get into it. Why do you not take on the other commercial commissions? Is it because they're not Kevin's?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's hard to give, like, a blanket statement, but I just I've been burned so many times. And mm-hmm. a lot of it is, like, an attitude thing. I mean, I think I like to think that I have a good instinct of, like, first impressions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, if somebody comes to me, even if it's just for, like, a personal, even if it's just a purchase, like, an existing piece of art, like, the way they say it, whether it's a phone call or an email or, like, in person, like, I might say yes and I might say no, you know, because mm-hmm. like, if I get the wrong vibe, I just know it's not going to work. And, like, it sounds kind of cold, but I've learned to trust that. And, like, I've learned to say no when I don't feel good about something from the get go. And most of those commercial inquiries are, like, you know, not to shit on, like, interior designers, 'cause, like, that's an incredible profession and there's so many talented people doing it. But, like, a lot of the time, if, like, an interior designer reaches out to me, they're kind of like, "Hey, we want, like, a room divider. How much?" And I'm like, "Do you really, like, it's a whole conversation. Like, we got to have, like, many meetings. Like, if you really want to have, like, if you want to commission, like, a large piece of, like, glass artwork, it's like, it's going to be many hundreds of hours probably on my part to build that, you know?" And mm-hmm. like, super shorthanded emails. A lot of the time, like, commercial jobs will, like, send me someone else's work and be like, "How much would it be to do something like this?" And, like, I wonder, like, why would you send that to me? 'Cause, like, if you found my contact, you must have seen an example of my artwork and you must see that everything I do looks, like, kind of a certain way. So, like, why would you ask me to do, like, you know, like, parakeets and, like, leaves, you know? Like, it's not that I'm above that. It's just that, like, it's not my wheelhouse. Like, I would do a bad job if I tried to do that. And I surprised myself by how, you know, people maybe just, I don't know. I think like, a problem with stained glass that I think we're all kind of, like, working on this a little mm-hmm. bit, but I think something that exists as an issue in the community is that stained glass and custom are, like, synonyms to people. And, like, you know, if you do custom stained glass, like, that's awesome. Like, it's great. And, like, there will always be a market for that. There are, like, always going to be opportunities to do, like, custom stained glass, but that's not just how it is always. Like, there's, like, a whole spectrum, you know? If, like, somebody contacts you for, like, the coffee thing is, like, something where, like, you probably had to, like, fit that into their thing and, like, customize it to a certain degree, but it still looks like your art. And, like, you know, it's not like if somebody sends you, like, a waterfall and is like, you know, "Do the waterfall," like, it's just like, it's an incredibly huge thing to ask of someone, especially if they, like, clearly have, like, a very specifically developed style of art, in my opinion. I'm getting kind of a big head talking about it, but, you know,
no.
I think that, like, most of those commercial, here's the other thing, the last point I'll make about the commercial inquiries is that, like, so often they are, not so often, every single time they inquire, they will fight me about the price. And like, individuals don't do that. Like when somebody calls you because they want to purchase your art, they might not be able to afford it, or they might ask if you have something like less expensive available, but they'll never say like, oh, it's $1,000. Like, how about I give you $600? Nobody would do that if they actually respect your art, because they assume you've priced it appropriately. But like, I think, and it's not even the fault of the commercial, you know, designer, whoever it is, like, it's just their job, I think, to do that.
And yeah, like, they have a budget and they're paid to cut corners where they can. But at the same time, like, I hear you, like, they just don't get it. And you don't want to deal with people that just like, don't get it. Like, you either get it or you don't get it. And if you don't get it out of the gates, it's like, you don't want to be the person who has to educate them.
Totally. And you don't have time. Like, we have too much to do. We all have too much to do. And like, it's just a waste of time. But you know, you got to pick your punches too. And like, sometimes those, like, I'm doing a big commercial job for a place in Houston, actually. And timeline was ridiculously short. The first email I got, I didn't love how it sounded. And I like almost deleted it. But then I was like, ah, I'm going to call this lady. And like, she ended up being really cool. And I'm like, glad I went for it. So like, you know, I would never want to encourage somebody to be like, you know, like short with somebody. Like if somebody contacts you, like, you got to give them the time of day. Like they, you know, they contacted you for a reason. But I think my point is just like, try to figure out, why did they contact you? And if it's like to support what you do and like who you are, then like, do it. But if it's because they have a vision and they want you to like do the labor to like make their vision come to life, like, fuck them. Don't, you know?
Yeah.
And like, the other thing is like, those commercial, just to kind of piggyback off what you said, like those commercial jobs, they do have budgets a lot of the time. And they'll never make it easy for you to figure out what it is, you know? And although I think they do come to you with a budget in mind, whatever you say, they're going to dial it back a little bit. So like, if you, you know, and this has happened to me so many times, if you tell them it's going to be $100, they're going to be like, ooh, I was really hoping to pay 80. Or if you say it's going to be $1,000, they're going to say, ooh, I was really hoping to pay like $650. Or if you say it's going to be $10,000, they're going to be like, oh, I really thought it'd be $7,420, you know? And like, I think it's just like, you know, you kind of, my advice would be to any artist, like, you kind of have to start high. If you, especially in the case of like something commercial where you think they're going to like try to leverage, you know, like, this is an exposure opportunity, or this is like a big job, you need this, you know, like, don't let them do that. Or if you sense that you can't get away from them doing that, like, start high and let them like work you down to like what you're like actually deserve, you know? Cause like, it's so easy to get like forced into, you know, not being paid what it's worth to do your work. And it's so important for us to, you know, be paid. It's very hard work. It's not just like painting pictures. Like, we start by painting a picture and then we have to do all of this like incredibly crazy hard labor, and we get cut, and like, you're working with toxic chemicals and shit. And like, you got to like find a way to transport the thing. And, you know, it's very hard, and like, people need to be paid for that. So again, I don't know if I answered your question, but I said a lot of stuff about stained glass.
It's all on brand. It's all on brand. I just want to add to that though, that if you do want to take on a commercial, you know, any kind of like large installation where it's like somebody else's opinion is in it with you and there is a budget, et cetera, I think it's really helpful too, to anticipate that that's going to happen and that's part of the process, and that they do that to everybody. And then it's easier to not take it as personally.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I completely agree. Yeah. It's, you know, although you got to be like tough, definitely don't take it personally. Cause like, you know, it's, you might get tough with somebody and then like, they're like, okay, we're going to go talk to another stained glass artist, and like, just let them, like, don't let it hurt your feelings. You know, I mean, unless you like, you really should. Need the money.
You know? But, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, know your value. You should go talk to somebody else. I also want to add one more thing to that. When people send you somebody else's work and say, can you do something like this? I think that it is your due diligence. And I want everybody to like put down your tools and listen to what I'm saying right now, because I think this is really important. You need to try, at least make an effort. You may not do it, but try to find the artist that made that piece and try to connect them.
Yeah, good point. I never really thought of that, but that is, yeah, that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it begs the question too, like, why didn't they contact that artist?
Right.
Maybe they just like Googled image search, like, stained glass waterfall, and like didn't look into it. But like, Yeah, if you can find that artist, like, surely they should be the one to
They should be the one.
Yeah. They would love to make another one, probably, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think about, like, can you imagine, like, if somebody, maybe this isn't that crazy of a thought, but it seems kind of crazy to me, like, if somebody sent, like, you know, one of my designs to, like, somebody that, like, paints on, like, glass, like, does, like, religious, like, portraits or something, or if somebody sent, like, religious portraiture to me, you know, it would just be, like, what? No, you know? And why wouldn't they just, like, contact the original artist is a great question. But yes, you're very constructive and correct to say that, like, it would be a good thing to, like, try and find that person and connect them.
Yeah, that's not my style, but this is so-and-so. And I put a shout out on my social media and I found them for you. Here's their email. Best of luck. Godspeed.
Totally. And that was like, I mean, it's a little bit different, but that's very similar to like some of the best advice my dad ever gave me was like, you know, it's like when you're first starting out, you kind of have to say yes to everything a little bit. And like, so the first piece I made was like a friend who was just like, do whatever you want. And I like made something that I still kind of like, it's kind of like a goofy little like prairie style looking thing. And then the second piece, I also did something like kind of just geometric or whatever. But then the third piece, somebody was like, can you do, I hope they're not listening to this, but they were like, can you do a cardinal? And I was like, yeah. Cause you know, I've drawn birds before. Like I was just thinking like, you know, if I want to like make it in the stained glass game and like quit my job, which was like priority number one, like I have to take any job. And it was like, I think I charged them like $60 for an entire like stained glass panel, you know? And like, it was like, it didn't look good, but anyway, like I was still working out of my dad's shop at that time. I would just like go there on the weekends in between my shifts, you know? And I was like doing this cardinal and I was just like, I had one of those pieces that was like this big, just a tiny little like micro piece for the like little beak on the cardinal, a little yellow triangle. And like, I just couldn't get it to like center in the lead, you know? And like, I was like moving things around and then like a nail would move and it would like slip out of place. And like, it was so frustrating and hard to do because my heart wasn't in it. And my dad was like, why did you take that job? Like, are you sure you want to do cardinals? I've never seen you draw cardinals before. Why are you making a cardinal? And I was like, well, it's $80. I need that, or $60, whatever. Like, I need the money. And he's like, not if it's going to take you 10 hours to make, you know, like you're, so anyway, yeah, another rant, but you're completely right that like, you got to just pick your punches and do what's right to you, you know?
And if you do know you're taking something on where like the hourly doesn't really make that much sense, you have to look at it as like, all right, well, you know, is the squeeze, what is the saying? Is the juice worth the squeeze in terms of, right. I might not be getting paid monetarily, but like, was this a great experience? Did I learn something huge that I, you know, is this like something that's totally outside my comfort zone, but is something that I want to move toward doing more of? And so this is like a learning experience, you know, I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. There are, you know, the value you get from like taking a job isn't just the money, you know, although that's like the main reason we have to keep coming back to it a lot of the time, you know, it's still like, yeah, like you said, if like one pays less per hour or you have to like, you know, buy a bunch of materials you wouldn't have bought otherwise or whatever it is, like, you know, if you get to like experiment and try something new and learn something along the way and like, as long as you're not like losing money, then like, you know, sometimes it's good to like bite the bullet and like try something new, but you know.
Just don't have to learn that lesson over and over again.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't make the same mistake twice. Not, I mean, mistake is maybe the wrong word, but like, I think I did that a couple times in the beginning. I like said yes to like two cardinals. And by the time you're doing the second cardinal, it's like, why did I do this again? I hated doing it the first time. Like, why would I do it twice? So like, it's okay to do it once. Like I learned something, but like one of the big learning lessons is like, that was my one time doing this. And like, now I do other things. Now I do like primary colored goo and whatever, you know.
You have a lot of eyeballs in your work too. Let's talk about the eyes.
The eyes are tricky because I started, you know, my first like show was all, it was called Faces and it was all like, you know, portraits as I call them. So it was like, there were a lot of eyes. I think, you know, when I was drawing, like I did like before stained glass, I did do some geometric stuff, drew a lot of portraits and I love cartoons and caricature. I love cubism and like, you know, pop art. And there's like so many guys from like, you know, mid 20th century that are just like my art idols. And like, they all do goofy faces. I wanted to like do something that was like the same art I would have done any other medium, you know? And to me, that was faces. And it still kind of is. Like, I want to move back towards that. But I also think that, like, you know, my introduction to the stained glass world, like, I know nothing about what's happening in the stained glass world. And, like, I'm kind of trying to change that. But I also just, I don't know, it doesn't really happen naturally. Like, I don't have any, like, magazines. I don't really, like, follow a lot of people, you know. And I think, like, one thing that happened was, like, I thought that that work of mine looked very unique with the eyes. And then, like, once I, like, got on Instagram and, like, people started sending me other people's accounts and whatever, or other stained glass people started following me and I'd see their work, I was like, okay, a lot of people are doing eyes. And that doesn't mean it's, like, that doesn't mean, like, I shouldn't do it, but it definitely made me, you know, a little bit, you know, like a circle with, like, an eye in it is, like, I had no idea how many times, like, that design has been made. And, like, you know, it doesn't mean you shouldn't make it. Like, if you want to make that, like, go for it. But it definitely made me feel like, okay, like, I can kind of, like, check that off my list of things to do because it seems like everybody's kind of doing it now, you know?
I want to read a quote from you. It said, "I got fixated on this phenomenon of seeing something abstract, especially something symmetrical, and feeling like it's got a facial expression and a personality. The more I thought about the concept, the more I started to see it out in the world, like the front of a vehicle that looks like a face that's smiling at you or maybe frowning."
Yeah, I love that. And I still see that in, I wasn't saying that I love my own quote. That would be kind of like, oh, I love the way I said that. I think it's called pareidolia or something like that. It's like an actual, like, psychological phenomenon where you, like, perceive a face in something. It's kind of like when, like, the first person, like, saw, like, Jesus, like, in a piece of toast or whatever. I don't know if it was a Cheeto or what the first thing was that they, like, sold on eBay for, like, $500,000 because it, like, kind of looked like Jesus's face was in it, you know? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about, and there okay. is a word for it, and I can't think of it right now, but yes.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, I think this kind of ties into the eye thing I was saying earlier where, like, there was a point where I was, like, maybe it doesn't always make sense to do this, like, obvious eye shape with, like, the big, you know, iris or pupil in the middle. But maybe I can still make work that, like, has that symmetrical quality and, like, kind of evokes a face. I think that you can, like, kind of, like, look at the world in a way where, like, you can sort of personify things. And, you know, it makes it just, like, a little bit more, like, fun and cartoony and, like, fantastical or something, you know?
So you said your inspiration is coloring books, video game imagery, candy packaging, Pokemon cards, cigarette packaging, and Happy Meal toys. Those are the things that tend to recur in my Google image search.
I think that my artwork deals with, like, childhood nostalgia a lot. And when I, like, think about colors and I think about, you know, if I want to, like, recreate a sensation that, like, means a lot to me, I think that often I'm thinking back to, like, a childhood experience I had. And a lot of those first memorable experiences I think we have in, like, capitalist America, for better or worse, are, like, designed around, like, things on the television or, like, you know, things that you were, like, begging your mom to buy you in the supermarket checkout or, like, whatever it is. And so, you know, a lot of the time if I, like, love a color palette and I try to understand why, especially as somebody that, like, doesn't have an art degree, a lot of the time what I find is that, like, it has some little historical significance in my life. And more often than not, it's just, like, the colors that were on the, like, Bubblicious, like, gum packaging, you know, that I, like, was addicted to for, like, 3 months when I was, like, 9 years old or whatever the fuck it is, you know, or, like, or it's, like, SpongeBob colors or something, you know, kind of stupid, but, like, also, like, undeniably significant to me. And I love the feeling of nostalgia. And I think that, like, art to me is, like, very much so all about sensation. And some of my favorite, like, sensations to try and explore with art come from, like, vague childhood memories. So I think that's maybe what I was trying to get at when I was, like, talking about the Pokemon cards and cigarettes or whatever.
And it's a celebration of those things too, which I think that maybe that's one of the reasons why your work resonates with people so much is because it scratches that itch for them too. You know what I mean? They're like,
definitely.
I feel like Bubblicious, but I don't know why. You know what I mean? But, like, I loved Bubblicious when I was a kid, and that package is so beautiful. And it really was, you know, calling to me at the checkout line with my mom.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it's kind of like, it's almost like, you know, if you have that vague fascination with like something from your childhood or something nostalgic, like you can almost kind of like, instead of just like writing it down or like trying to like look up a picture of it or even just like drawing a picture of it, you can almost like reappropriate it into something that is like agrees with the context of my current art. So like in this case, it's like I'm doing this like geometric art in this like kind of sophisticated medium, which is leaded glass. It's like hard to do and it's hard to make it look good. And so it's kind of a way of like me like creating a bond with like my little child self that was like loved colors and loved candy, but like now I can like kind of like turn that into something that's like a little bit more like you know, I don't want to say like intellectual or sophisticated because I'm not either one of those things, but you know what I mean, just like button it up a little bit and like turn it into like a piece of art that like was formed through like my adult mind, kind of like it's like putting two contexts together or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I want to add to that, that I think what you are saying right now actually is like really incredible advice to other stained glass artists or other artists in general, in terms of like somebody that's trying to find their style and trying to figure out like what they like, is to reappropriate the things that you love and the things that like give you that like warm, giddy feeling of being a kid and try to translate it into whatever your identifiable product is.
Definitely.
You know?
I think, yeah, I think it's a great way to think. And like, you know, it's also like, I think a lot of my favorite artists, when asked how they find inspiration, like often have like huge like pegboards or like cork boards that are like covered in shit they've clipped out of magazines or whatever. And like, that's just as modern as the next thing, but maybe a modern day equivalent is like, you know, I use Google image search all the time. And like, I'll just like think of something that's like on my mind, whether it's like an old thing or like somebody else's piece of art or, you know, the sriracha bottle, like, why does that look good? You know, like, I love that way, the way that design looks. Like, why do I like that more than like the Tabasco design, you know? And like, if you just like pull them both up, put them in front of you and like, think about it, like, is it the green cap? Like, maybe I just like that green cap, maybe green and red and white, like look good together. Or maybe it's like the spatial arrangement of the letters on the thing, but like, you know, like no little piece of inspiration is insignificant.
Kind of try to deconstruct why it resonates with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. That's really good. I want to talk about your show recently at, in Portland at Nucleus Portland.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Cause you don't come from the gallery world.
Yeah, I don't. I think, for a long time I was really pushing for that. You know, I wanted to like make more exhibitable artwork. And I think that, I think I'm going to shift that way eventually, but the way it came about was they just like found me somehow and like emailed me. And I was like at a point where I was like, I want to say yes to any gallery show, especially a solo show, which that was with Kirby, as you probably know, but they technically call it a two-person solo show, which like doesn't really make sense. But anyway, it was like, seemed like an opportunity I had to say yes to. And I'm glad I did, especially because it made me and Kirby like friends, and Kirby's fucking awesome. I don't know if you've talked to her, but she's the best. She's like my mentor now. So anyway, they just like found me one way or another and connected us, and it was great. It was very hard for me to get the work out there, just because Portland's so far away from Chicago, and, or maybe I would in the right circumstance, but I'm kind of like between you and me, I'm worried about them like returning any works to me that don't sell, because I just feel like they're not going to package them right and they're gonna just be broken when they get here, you know. But because, you know, like a lot of art galleries like deal with a lot of sculpture, even like glass sculpture, you know. But I think after I had like already signed all the papers with Nucleus and everything, I realized that they mostly show like prints and like small like paintings and stuff, which like doesn't mean they're like not capable, but like once I shipped the stuff out, they were like, they kind of said like, how do you recommend we like package these to like get them back to you? And I was like, I don't want to give you any advice on that, because like I would just like call an art handling company basically. So anyway, it's showing glass is tricky because it's just so fragile and so hard to move around. But locally, I would say yes to any gallery that wants to show my stuff. But like going across state lines, it's just like a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of an undertaking.
Unless you're going to drive it.
Right.
What did you do? Did you just create everything and pack it with peanuts? Like, what was your...
No, I paid a guy to drive it for me.
You did?
And okay. Yeah. And he was like a friend of mine, and he kind of needed to go. He needed to drive to Portland for like another reason. And it just, it was kind of like good timing. And that, so that worked out. Like, getting the stuff out there actually wasn't that bad just because he was able to help me. But yeah, which is why I'm like kind of just nervous.
How many pieces were in the show?
I think Kirby and I each had 7 pieces.
Okay. And how many sold?
Good question. I haven't asked Kirby if she sold anything. It's still, they're not hung right now, but they're still like available through the gallery. So I think I sold like 2 or 3 maybe, but, they keep them around, and I kind of like told them early on, like, if they want to like lower the price over time, cause like, I'd kind of rather they sell them at like less, you know, than what I would normally charge, just to like not have them go through the hassle of shipping them back and everything. So I think like a lot of people are holding out for like the end of the show potential price drop or whatever, you know. But
yeah.
I also like didn't push it very hard. I feel kind of like cringe about like telling people on Instagram that like things are for sale, you know, and like pumping up my own, which I shouldn't do. I know, it's so stupid, but
it's hard. It is hard, but you got to do it. You have to, like, that's one of those things where I feel like we were talking about how, like, yeah, you draw a picture and then that's like the beginning of it, you know, and there's all these other parts of the job that you got to do, and you got to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, this, so I'm kind of bad sometimes at Instagram. And I meant to say this when we first got on the horn here, but when you asked me to like ask my followers if they wanted to ask anything, I like wanted to do it, but I usually, if I'm not making a post, I delete the app from my phone because like it just consumes my entire life. So I read your message on the computer and I was like, how do I make a story on the computer? And then I tried to put the app back on my phone and I couldn't remember my password. And anyway, so all of that is to say, I'm just like not particularly good at using Instagram, but I'm trying to get better and like, you know, figure out how to do it. But
it's all good. It's all good. And luckily, you know, I think you have enough of a following. I think that the people that love your work, like, really love your work. And so if they want to buy something, they're going to figure it out. Like, you know, you're not going to have to like shove it down their throat. They're going to be waiting for the opportunity. So I think you're good.
I hope that's true. Yeah. Thanks.
So you have one piece on your website called Glass Relief, and it's, who's Bill Ding? Tell us about that piece.
Yeah. Bill Ding is, a fictional car mechanic that is a character from a PC video game called Lego Island that I think came out in like 1995 or something. And I think it was like the first time I ever like used a computer was like my mom got the first ever computer. She like got internet, the like phone line thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but I had just been thinking about that game and, you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where they were like formative times when I was like, it was the first time I had ever like pushed a button and like something like happened on the screen. And it was just like such a magical moment. And like, I think that like, that was like, I just like snapped into reality and like my brain started like recording and just like absorbing whatever was on the screen. And so I just like had this moment where I was like, kind of like the game, I don't even really remember the premise of the game, but I know that it was in like a tropical, I think it's from Japan. So it's like a tropical, like Japan, like kind of environment. And like, there's like palm trees and stuff. And, I had like started like making this just like colored pencil drawing that had all these palm trees and like pizzas and stuff. And I realized that I had been thinking about this game where you like have to, like in that game, there's like all these different things you have to do. And one of them is like delivering pizzas, I think. And there's like palm trees everywhere. And I don't know. I was just like thinking about that game a lot. And anyway, you have to like take your car to the mechanic and his name is Bill Ding. And like, I just think that's like such a beautiful name. Also, my brother's name is Bill. So I think maybe that's why it stuck with me a little bit.
That's really sweet.
So really, it's just a bunch of gibberish and nonsense for you to answer your question of what inspired that piece. Doesn't really mean anything.
But you did some glass fusing to make it.
I did, yeah. And I like doing that. I like I'm about to move out of my building, but the building I'm working in now has like 90 art studios, and it's just like a huge art studio warehouse in Chicago. And there's a bunch of ceramicists, including the building manager, my friend Noah Singer. And so he has like beautiful fancy kilns. And so if I just like want to fuse something like out of scraps or whatever, I can bring it over to him. I have a little kiln too. That's like this dangerous old thing from the 70s my dad gave me. But it's not really big enough to do anything cool. But yeah, I like the idea of making like relief artwork, you know, like more like sculpture kind of. And if it could pay the bills, I would probably like switch to that as opposed to like doing leaded glass work, because it's like very fun. It feels more like almost like you're molding with like clay or something to like stack the pieces and like put things where you want them, and as opposed to like cutting for like stained glass where everything has to be so accurate. And like,
I think there's a place for that for you, especially in the gallery world. Like that piece specifically, I could totally see that in a gallery.
Yeah, I thank you. I think so too. It's just like, it's hard to convince. This is like, I mean, this is the curse of galleries. And I think that like it's going away a little bit in like the art world in America, but it's like, people can't see past like what you are known for, you know. A good example of the gallery dilemma is Nucleus contacted me and needed some work pretty quickly, you know, just to say it easily, in like a couple months, I think. And I was like, well, there's not really any way I can make enough leaded glass pieces in that amount of time, but I would love to make you some relief work. And I think it would be better in the gallery anyway. It's kind of like intended to be hung on a wall rather than like in a window, you know? And she was like, oh, those look great, but no, we like really want the stained glass, like the one that like is in all your pictures with like the light coming through and everything. And like, I was like, okay. And so like, that's what we did, you know? And I like got an extension basically. And we were like, okay, we'll do it next year instead of this year. But basically, like, the point is that when galleries like approach an artist, it's usually because they've like seen something that they like. And right now there like aren't really examples of my work, my relief work, hanging in galleries. So like, even though I think that like I can do better things with that, especially in the world of like exhibited arts, people just know me for what I'm known for, which is like, you know, the like stained glass faces, you know? And so it's kind of, you know, it's like, even if you're like a painter, if you like have a, you know, if your first solo show is like paintings of chairs, and then like you feel like you shed that skin and you don't want to paint chairs anymore, like another gallery approaches you and you're like, I want to paint like Christmas trees this time. They're like, oh no, we want you to do chairs. Like, you're the chair guy. And it's like, a lot of artists, I think, just like continue painting chairs for the rest of their lives, because it's like, I don't know, it becomes your thing. And like, on one hand, it's like great if you can like make money painting chairs. But on the other hand, it's like, you should only paint what you want to paint. If you want to paint Christmas trees, you should paint Christmas trees. But like, maybe nobody's going to buy them, which kind of sucks. So I don't know. These are life's great, great mysteries, Siobhan.
No, it's a vicious cycle. But I think you just start making that work and put it on your website and post about it on Instagram. And that's how people see it. And that's how they know you too. You know, you just got to mix it up. It's on you.
I know. Yeah, you're totally right. And I've had like moments where I love my job forever. Like, this is what I'm going to do, you know, but like, there have been times where I think like, I bet if I really wanted to shift away from this, like whether it's like painting with oil paints or like doing relief glass fused work or doing like metal sculpture, I bet if I just like erased all of my Instagram posts or like archived them or whatever, and then like just started posting like the oil paintings, like people would forget about the stained glass, because like, I think that we just like live in this like point in history where it's like literally everyone's perception of you is what they see when they go to your Instagram.
Yeah, I know, but please don't do that, because when you said it gave me a lot of anxiety.
Well, I won't, but I don't know. I might experiment. I'll always keep a website. I'm not going to like erase my glasswork from the world, but I don't know. There are times when I'm like, I like look at my Instagram and I'm like, who is this? What is this stuff? Why have I done this? You know? And like, I know that the, you know, it's not like bad. It's just like, it's just kind of weird, because like, I feel like I'm like a complicated person. And if you like look at my thing, which like everybody thinks is like the like visual definition of who I am, it's like just stained glass pieces. But like, stained glass is like a relatively like recent embarkment for me, you know, it's like a recent endeavor. And like, I love it and I'm passionate about doing it, but it's also, it's kind of just like my job a little bit, you know. It'd be like if you like sold envelopes for a living and like your whole Instagram was like filled with like all the envelopes you sold, you know. Maybe it's not that bleak, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but also like, you are the master of your own destiny and you are the one who's posting on your Instagram. And so if you feel like you're not like giving all the facets of your complex personality and lifestyle, then I think that like that's up, then do that. Like then start posting more of sunsets.
Right. Totally. And that would be the first thing, by the way. Just a nice pretty sunset.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I want to read another quote. It says, Ben believes there is a nascent reawakening of interest in stained glass art and composition and hopes that he is right, citing the medium as underutilized. He ascribes this to the fact that it's one of those old handcrafts that needs to be taught. You either happen upon a job or come from a family that was in that trade as he did. It is a trade that generally resides behind closed doors. Ben is not interested in gatekeeping secrets for the stained glass Illuminati. His philosophy is that it's hard to learn these things, but if he can do anything to help people learn, he's into it. So this leads to my question. Mm-hmm. Do you want to teach?
Maybe, but I feel like I'm too busy, and I know that's bullshit, but like, I just can't imagine finding the time for it. And I also, this is going to sound so stupid, but it's a real thing for me. When I was in the coffee world, for a while, my title was educator. I like was working for this company, and like my whole 9 to 5 was like teaching people about coffee. So I would like have classes like in the roasting facility, and I'd go to wholesale accounts and like teach them how to use the espresso machine. I would teach people how to like fix stuff, or, you know, my whole thing was education. And it was fun because it was gratifying, and also because I got to like interact. It's like a reverse field trip, I think, for like people. If you like work at a bar or like a cafe or a restaurant, and like somebody comes from the coffee company to like teach you stuff, like it's like just like a special little thing, you know, for them. So like I would like feed off of that energy where they got to like do something besides just like emptying the bus bin for a couple hours, you know. So anyway, what I'm getting at is I have this problem when I'm teaching, where thankfully it hasn't happened yet today, but often if I'm talking for a long period of time, I get this like tickle in my throat that like literally prevents me from making sound. So I'll be like in the middle of a sentence, and then I'll just be like, and I'll like try to say like, what I want to say is like, sorry, there's something in my throat, but no sound will come out. And it's a mortifying experience when it happens. It's like, it's just the most embarrassing, weird thing. And like, usually what would happen is I'd have to just like walk out of the room in dead silence. So like a classroom full of people, they're all looking at you. And then all of a sudden your sentence just stops. And then you're like trying to make sound and you can't. And then you just walk out of the room. Like they're like probably thinking like, is he about to die? You know, like, is he going to pass away in front of us? So anyway, one of the big reasons that I cannot teach stained glass is because I am mortified of the thought that my voice might stop working while I'm talking to people.
Ben, do you think this is psychological, maybe?
It feels very physical when it's happening. It feels literally like I feel the tickle coming, and then it's like, I think it has to do with my tonsils. I think if I had my tonsils removed, maybe it wouldn't happen anymore. But I've kind of had like a lifelong affliction with like my tonsils becoming inflamed. Like if I have like if I'm sick, my tonsils will get fucked up. Mm-hmm. So I think it has to do with my tonsils like getting like irritated or something.
Okay.
But you know, it's just one of those things that I'd rather just ignore.
Okay. All right.
So really, really bad answer to a very simple question you asked me, but
no, it's the best answer to that question I've ever gotten before. Of any time I've ever asked anybody about teaching, I wish that was the answer I get more often, actually.
Yeah, just trying to be honest with you here, Siobhan.
I appreciate that. This is a safe space.
Thank you.
Do you have any glass hacks? You kind of did earlier with the printing thing, but like, do you have any other ones that you want to share?
Yeah, I think I'm full of them. I'm going to try to think of at least one or two while we're on the call here, but in case I can't come up with any, my DMs are always open. I'm pretty good about answering them. I ignore some, I'm not going to lie, but like if I can see that somebody has reached out to me because they need advice or they like want to talk about like, how do I improve yada yada, like I always answer because it's just like fun. And I feel like it's like one of very few things I can like contribute to, you know, society or like the stained glass world specifically. Okay. The first big thing that comes to mind is this isn't super easy to do, but it's worth it. When you get the grinder, especially the one that is like the brand is like the grinder, I think, mm-hmm. the like flat gray thing. It's got that little plastic plexiglass visor thing. Take that off, throw it in the garbage. We're not using that. It doesn't work. It gets scratched and then it's cloudy and you can't see through it. And it's not big enough to shield you. There two times I've had glass in my eyeball in the whole time I've been working with glass. It should never happen to anyone. It's not something that you can ever risk happening. It could totally fuck up your eyes. It's happened to me twice, and I got really lucky. I was able to get the glass out without going to the hospital. But both times it happened because I was using that shitty visor, and I had glasses on, but the shard somehow got around both. So the hack is get rid of that thing. And the easiest way you can do this is take like two cinder blocks or something, put them on either side of your grinder, and then put a piece of clear tempered glass on top. Not picture frame glass, not something that's going to be breakable, but something like coffee table surface, you know, like a tempered strong piece of glass on top. And that way, like, it's almost like you're sticking your hands into like a sandblasting booth where it's like, you're basically completely removed from like any ability other than like a little like rectangle maybe in front of your chest. Like everything is blocked if you have that big surface of glass. And also with glass, like when it gets those like little shards of like sand basically, like, and like muck stuck to it, it doesn't scratch. So when you wipe it off, you're like left with a perfectly clear thing you can like look through. But like the grinding is like a very important part of the process. And I think that like a lot of people struggle with it because they can't see what they're doing, but like it's really, really important to be able to see. And like with the kind of work I do, that's like really geometric, or maybe this is true with all work, I don't know, but like every little bump on the edge, like has to be filed into like a perfect, like I'm kind of a perfectionist with it maybe, but I also think it like, it really helps when you're assembling that everything is ground down the right way. And the only way I can do that is if I can see properly. So again, to summarize the hack, get rid of the plexiglass thing, rig up, you know, I like built like a wood thing that's like encompasses the whole box and I can like stick my hands with a piece of glass and then there's tempered glass. But you can just use like a stack of books on either side, a stack of dictionaries or something, and a piece of tempered glass over the top.
Can you do me a I'm going to ask you for two favors. The first is that the day that your episode airs, will you post a picture on your stories of this and be like, hey, for those people listening to the episode today, I said I would post a picture of this in my stories.
Yes.
Can you do that, A?
Yes.
And B, I want to do an episode this season that's all glass hacks, where people like call in, like leave me a voice memo, like, hey, my name's so-and-so, I'm from so-and-so, and like, this is my glass hack. Can we save the rest of your glass hacks for that episode?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
No, I have other ones. I have other ones. I'll save them.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure I got some. I know it's going to be good. So I'm asking you because I know that it's going to be like a really, really good hack and it's going to make the episode even better.
I mean, don't build it up too much. I think they're very good, but they also like, I feel like it might be something that the average stained glass person hears and they're like, what is this like guy talking about? You know?
No. It's going to change your life. That's how we're going to look at it and anticipate it.
Yeah. You just tell them that and they won't be able to think otherwise.
Okay. Who's your favorite artist? Not stained glass.
Can I give you like 10?
You can, but how about this? Give me one now. And then the other 9, I want you to send me, and then I'll put those in the show notes too, for people that want to do like a deeper dive.
Okay. If I had to pick one artist, I'd probably say Roger Brown.
Okay.
He's one of the Chicago Imagists. He's a painter. He passed away like I think in the 90s. Just such an amazing artist. He's from Alabama originally, but most of his career was like in Chicago or around Chicago. And I don't know. He's an amazing artist. I could talk about him all day, but I won't. I'll give you another 9 next time we talk.
Okay. No, I still want them. Yeah. I do want them. Who would you like to nominate on the podcast? Now, I want to preface this with, as we're moving into season 3 here, because you nominate somebody doesn't mean that I can get them on the podcast, but it's more of like, I'll try to, but it's more of like an opportunity to like shout out a bud that you like really love and you think that they have an interesting story. So who would you like to nominate?
I need a second. I think, could I give you three? Because I feel like
all of
not great odds that you'll be able to track them down, but that might be worth coming on the show. There's a lady who I don't know, but she's an artist who makes more like sculptures that are made with stained glass, whose name is Christy Covington. And I don't think she has any social media. She does have a website. Her sculptures are fucking amazing. They're like, it's like, she's the only like modern artist working with stained glass that I've seen and been like, damn, that is a completely new thing you're doing that looks incredible. And like, nobody else has ever done anything like it. So I kind of feel like she might be a little too cool to like do an interview, but if you can like track her down, like her work is so cool. I mean, just look her up and like see what the sculptures look like. And you're going to be like, damn, that's fucking insane.
Okay.
I think. There's two artists that aren't in the States that I really love. Just cause I found them on Instagram. One is, I might have to pull it up really quick if you don't mind hanging for 1 second.
Yeah.
One of them is named Haba Hiroshima, I think. He's kind of like just somebody who followed me, and I like happened to click on his thing, and I was like, damn, this dude's like doing like really nice leaded glass work in Japan. And I think he's like a young guy. I actually think that I think when he first followed me, he might have been new to Instagram, and the first picture he ever posted, because he didn't have many, I just like scrolled down. The first one he ever posted was just like a selfie, and like his eyes are all bloodshot. And it was like in Japanese, but then I clicked translation and it said something like booze and in me or something like that. And I was just like, yes, like this is my guy. But like his leaded glass work is really cool. I don't know if he speaks English, but I'm sure that he look at his stuff and you'll probably.
What's his Instagram again?
It's glassworker88. And his name, I think, is Haba Hiroshima.
Okay.
He's awesome. And then if I could give you one more, there's a Korean dude who follows me, whose work is totally amazing, named Jin Young, J-I-N Young. And his Instagram is Jin Young Glass. And it seems like he does everything under the sun. He does like traditional stuff. He does like, it's all like bright colors that I love. He does like primary stuff. They might be kind of hard to track down and or may not speak English. But the one person I was thinking I would nominate, I saw in the like screenshot thing you posted, you're already going to interview, who's Timo, who,
yeah.
And like, he's like another artist who like, I just like found, or he found me, I can't remember which way, but like, he's just like, I think his art is like, very much so never been done before. He's like doing a totally new thing. And like, I don't know. He's really cool. So I'm glad you tracked him down, and I can't wait to hear what he says about it.
Yeah, he is really cool. I'm excited to talk to him too. We've had a hard time connecting because he was in Amsterdam for a while and the time difference and then like his schedule and my schedule, but we have it on the books. I think I'm talking to him next week. I think next week I'm talking to him and I'm talking to Kirby.
Tell him I said hello. And tell Kirby I said hello.
I definitely will. She saw your name on that list and she DM'd me and was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I love Ben. So,
oh, great. Yeah.
The admiration is mutual. Ben, I'm going to ask you one more question that is entirely for me and not for our listeners. But will you do a doodle and sign it? And can I have it? Will you send it to me if I give you my mailing address?
Yeah, of course. I'll do you a doodle, and I'll also send you like a little glass something or other too.
Oh my God, you're the sweetest. Speaking with you today absolutely was delightful. You are just, you're across the board. Delight, delight, delight. Your work is delight. Everything, everything. Thank you so much. I really had fun chatting with you today, and I appreciate you.
Thanks, Siobhan. This was awesome. I'm so glad we got to talk, and I hope we get to do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, have a good rest of your day. Oh, wait, I always say something at the end of all my podcasts. What is it? I remember. Have a wonderful and productive day in the studio today, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Siobhan. You too.
To see more of Ben's work, his Instagram is at bens.website. That's bens.website. And mine is at Runa Glassworks. For all the Patreon page members, Ben has a discount code for 40% off everything in his online shop. This includes merchandise as well as his glasswork. And for 3 lucky Patreon members, he's sending a wine tote. They're so cute. They come in 2 different color choices and they each hold 2 bottles of wine. I'll be doing a drawing in my Instagram stories on December 11th, 2022. That's 12 days after this episode is released. Next week's episode is with Josephine A. Geiger. If you remember Megan McElfresh's episode, she met Josephine when they were roommates at the SGAA conference back in 2015. She nominated her to be a guest on Cracked, and our schedules finally lined up to make it happen. Spoiler alert, it was worth the wait. Till then, stay warm, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.